Blog Talk Radio.
Dog Works Training Centers, professional dog training in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, presents Mush You Huskies, a show about dog-powered sports and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Mush You Huskies is part of Twine Group Media and is syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. It is full into spring up here in Willow, Alaska, and this is Robert Forto hosting Mush You Huskies. And on the line, we have our co-host in Denver. Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing great.
How is the weather in Denver? I know it's warming up and the big breakup is on up here in Willow. What's the weather like there?
Well, we've been in about 70-degree weather for about a week. You have a couple of afternoon storms that come in, but for the most part, it has been a gorgeous spring.
You know, it's shaping up to be a very nice spring up here in what they call the mushing capital of the world. And we just had a big sponsor meeting up here just the other day, and I was pointing out to these guys that there are literally more mushers here in 2 or 3 mile radius than there probably is all in the state of Colorado, and they had never seen anything like it. They said it was one of the most beautiful places in the world, and I know we're going to bring up our guest, Vaughn Martin, here in just a second, and he can probably lay testament to some of that. But what do you think about Alaska and the mushing scene, Michelle?
Well, I haven't been able to get into it as greatly as you have because I'm still down here in Colorado. But I am excited to get to spend my first winter there this year and hopefully get to meet everybody that you call friends and look forward to the future.
Well, you know, our son's coming up on June 7th as soon as they get out of school, and he's going to be working as a handler for a friend of ours, Aaron and Paul. He's going to be working for those guys throughout the summer and hopefully give him a pretty good work ethic in the terms of a mushing kennel. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that, and not to brag about my own kid, but I think that in certain circumstances, Tyler is more than qualified as a 16-and-a-half-year-old to handle a mushing kennel of 60-plus dogs. Tyler is canine CPR and first aid certified. He has been handling dogs and training dogs for us since he was 5 years old. He knows the ins and outs of a dog yard. The things that he lacks have to do with, you know, basic mechanic work on snowmobiles and four-wheelers and things like that. But, you know, he's a smart kid. He'll get it done. You know, and then there's a lot of people that listen and they say, well, you know, I'm 18, I'm 23, I'm 22, I'm going up to Alaska to handle for, you know, some big-time musher. And, you know, so now you're saying a 16-year-old is more qualified than I am. Well, yes, that's true. He knows dogs. He knows when they're, you know, not feeling well. He knows when there could be a potential dog fight. He knows those types of things to look out for. And I would encourage anybody thinking about going up there to handle for someone, you know, to do some volunteering at a local animal shelter first and foremost. It gives you a real taste of dogs and behavior.
Well, as my friend Paul says, does Tyler know the business end of a scooper?
More than he'd care to admit, yes.
That's the big part of the job for a sled dog kennel handler, for sure, is the business end of a scooper. So I think he'll work out just fine, and he'll be up here the first week of June. He and I are flying back up from Colorado together, so I think it'll be an interesting season for him. So let's keep everybody up to date with that. So without further ado, go ahead.
Well, and actually, you also have our son Kyle, who turns 19 this year, coming up again with another U-Haul full of junk to come to our house, and he's planning on spending 6 weeks with you to fix the roof and build our kennel yard this summer before he heads back down to run the business for us. So we've got a lot of things going on in the next few weeks, actually. So I think everybody should stay tuned and listen up because we could be asking for some help in the moving process.
So there you go. So without further ado, we're going to bring in our guest. His name is Vaughn Martin, and he was on our show way back in December talking about the 2011 Serum Run, which was still in the initial planning stages at that point. And he is the author of a book called A Long Way to Nome, the Serum Run, the Norman Vaughn 25 Serum Run. So, Vaughn, how are you?
I'm fine. Robert and Michelle, thank you so much for bringing me back on the show and having the opportunity to talk about the 2011 Serum Run Expedition to Nome.
You know, I was part of it at the very beginning. I went up to Nenana with you guys and saw our good friend Erin off and helped her out. And I tell you what, that's a pretty chaotic weekend up there. We were all buzzing around, and we had hoped to talk to you when we were up there, but we just didn't have the time to sit down for a few minutes and even grab some notes together because everything was so busy. So let's talk a little bit about the 2009 Serum Run and how that affected not only your life but the entire expedition. Then we'll talk a little bit about your book, and then we'll talk about the expedition in 2011. So what happened in 2009, Vaughn?
Well, to begin with, just a quick explanation of the Serum Run expedition itself for the listeners today. It is a non-competitive event. It takes place every other year. It retraces the original 1925 route across Alaska from Nenana to Nome, whereas the diphtheria antitoxin was relayed by dog teams to Nome when it was stricken by diphtheria back at that time. And we run every mile of that original route to commemorate those original mushers and their dogs. We also have a medical mission education program, and as we stop at each of the villages or into the schools, we take time to give a health education to the students and recall the history of the mushers that came through their village. So it's a really exciting event. Again, it's non-competitive. That really separates it out from the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race as a competitive event. I first had the chance to participate in the event in 2009, and like any expedition, it's a very fluid process. At that year, Alaska experienced wave after wave of really bad weather that swept over the interior from the coast and dropped a tremendous amount of snow to the point that there was no travel possible on a long stretch of the Yukon River between Tanana and Ruby. It's about 120 miles, and we airportaged the dogs over that section. It was about halfway through the expedition to Ruby, hoping the snow machiners that are part of our expedition team who haul supplies could punch through the snow and come up behind us, but they were unable to do so, and the expedition ended up being shut down due to that horrible weather and trail condition at Galena, and we flew the dogs out to Anchorage, and each of us made our way home. So it was a disappointing end to a lot of hard work and preparation that year.
And, you know, you did write a book about it, and we're going to talk about that in just a second, but a big part of this expedition for you was your female dog that had passed away, Wolfie. Can you tell us a little bit about her?
Wolfie was my first sled dog. I got her in 1992, and as is the way with mushers and sled dogs, one dog leads to the next, and she was the one who really got me started in this world of mushing and introduced me to this magnificent lifestyle. And she traveled everywhere with me. She was a part of my dog team. And when she passed away due to cancer in 2005, before I helped her over the Rainbow Bridge, as we call it, I made her a promise that if I ever went to Nome by dog team, that I would be sure to take her along so her spirit could help show the way. And I did take her on that 2005 trip, but again, we only got halfway. And it was another 2 years before the opportunity presented itself for me to become a part of the 2011 expedition and see if we could set out and complete that journey together to Nome.
So on the Serum Run expedition, you guys have support from snowmobile drivers. They carry all of your gear, which is an entirely different setup than they do with the Iditarod. So when people think of the Serum Run, they often misunderstand what that is compared to the Iditarod. So can you tell us a little bit, compare and contrast of Iditarod versus Serum Run?
Yes, again, the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race is a competitive event that begins in Anchorage and runs approximately 1,100 miles to Nome. The Serum Run Expedition is a non-competitive event to commemorate the 1925 Serum Run across Alaska. And in 2011, it was comprised of 11 dog teams and 11 snow machiners who helped haul supplies along the trail. We did have cached supplies about every 3 days along the trail, but between those 3 days, the mushers and their snow machine partners were responsible for carrying straw for the dogs, food for the mushers and the humans and the dogs as well, your camping gear and tents, and everything you would need between your cache points, which, again, were about 3 days apart. So it was about a 22-member expedition, but you're traveling at your own speed. Again, it's non-competitive. So I found on the 2011 expedition, as I think most mushers, that you're alone on the trail most of the time. You're not traveling with your snow machiner. They're kind of traveling at their pace or traveling according to the assignment by the trail boss for that day, which might be as a trail breaker or a sweep at the end or maybe running kind of in between during the day. So you have the chance to really experience Alaska by dog team. Just you and your dogs do most of the day between villages.
And the good thing about it is you guys stop in a prescribed location every night, and during those stops you often talk to the local villagers about particular topics. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, we do. We have the chance at most of the villages to give a school presentation. So it's a very busy agenda for our expedition team. You start your day at about 5 or 6 in the morning with dog care. By 8 o'clock in the morning, you have a meeting with the team. By about 9 or 10 o'clock, you've got a presentation at the school or the village introducing who you are and what you're there to do, and talk about the health education program for the year. In 2011, that was suicide prevention, and it was led by one of our mushers, who is a Alaska State Trooper, who took the lead on that presentation. And then afterwards, it's back out to dog care and prepare the dogs for that day's run, which is immediately follows the trail breakers who go out. And then you've got a run of anywhere from about 35 to 60 miles for that day, get into the next village that night, go through the dog care, bed down, and then repeat the process the next day. It's kind of how the day goes.
So I want to touch on that suicide prevention thing in just a second, but again, to just talk about the Iditarod, there is a lot of the same checkpoints that you guys use on the Serum Run that they use on Iditarod, and the big difference is pretty much they're just flying through those checkpoints and literally signing in and signing out, so they don't get a lot of that interaction that you guys get with the villagers when they're racing to Nome, literally, in the Iditarod. So when you guys speak to these guys, you guys have what you said was a medical mission. And this year was suicide prevention. So I'd like to give a little public service announcement about suicide in Alaska. Why did you guys choose that topic, and how was it received as you were going through the villages?
Well, our musher who's coordinated that program, Terrence Shanigan, is a trooper in your area there, and he recognized, along with the department, that there's just a terrible ratio between Alaska and the lower 48 as far as suicide rates. It's very high, again, compared to the lower 48. And it was just an issue that they felt was good to address and to make sure that there was that the villagers knew there was an outreach program, there was a number to call, just kind of give them some heads up on who to contact and where to go for help. If they suspected that there was a family member maybe facing a crisis or even themselves, and it was a great program.
Why is suicide such a prevalence up here in the villages?
Well, I guess it's pretty complicated. I probably couldn't address it as well as our team leader, but it certainly is very high. It's high among young people. There was one gentleman that I met on the 2009 run there along the trail who was one of our coordinators for our team that I understood had committed suicide and taken his life before we returned in 2011, and it was just heartbreaking to me. But I guess it's very complicated. I guess I don't really couldn't really address it very well, but it's a real problem there.
Okay. All right. So let's jump into the 2011 Serum Run Expedition. And it really started back in October, didn't it? When you guys really started planning this and making sure everything was ready to go and everybody got picked. So let's start the story there, and then we'll tell some stories as we go about the expedition itself. And Michelle and I will kind of pepper you with questions as you go.
Oh, please do. Yeah, the team selection was in May of 2010, so there was a lot of lead time for those who had been selected to begin to prepare their gear and their outfitting and make sure their dogs were getting underway as far as their training program in September or 1st of October, weather permitting. I'm in Washington State, first of all. I live in the foothills of the Cascade Mountains in southwest Washington, where I train my dogs. And I did have to truck the entire dog team. I took 14 dogs up. I had 12 to run, but I had two alternates, plus about 2,000 pounds of gear and supplies. So I had to leave home after the first of the year and make the long six-day drive to Alaska, which I did in early January. And what the team does is conducts a three-day shakedown run. It's about a 100-mile run where we test the gear, we test our partnerships with one another between Musher and Snow Machines, we camp out on the river or the swamp. We have the chance to really engage all our skills and work with our dogs and just kind of flesh out, hopefully, some of the problems that we might experience on the run itself. And then you've got a few weeks of training prior to the actual departure of the expedition from the Nana, which was on February 20th.
And I tell you what, that Sunday in Nana was something that I've never seen before in terms of weather. When I think about Alaska weather, that's what I think of. You know, down here in Willow, it's no different than northern Minnesota, at least the winter this year. But up there, it was, I don't know, maybe 10 below. The wind was howling like you've never seen, sideways snow. And when you guys took off from Nana, it looked like you guys were in for a real adventure.
It was bad. You were there, so you saw it firsthand what we experienced. Just getting the dogs ready to go. It was about 12 below zero. I think the winds were blowing up to 40 miles an hour. It was very windy. We were preparing and dressing the dogs for frostbite when we left the Nana. And I recall that when we dropped down onto the river with our ceremonial serum that we had just picked up from the railroad conductor who had arrived there in the Nana an hour earlier, as we're on our way to Nome, we weren't a quarter mile down that river, and there was just a complete whiteout. We lost the trail. Markers were being blown down because you're down on the ice. And I remember stopping my team. I was still attached to my Snow Machine partner because they were trying to help ease us out of town and get us onto the trail. But I remember walking up in front of the dog team and just taking the leader by their neckline there, and standing there for the longest time as the wind waxed and waned looking for a trail marker. And when I finally spotted one, it was a couple hundred yards distance. And I remember walking the dogs across that river, kind of fearing open water maybe along the way and trying to see our way, and led the dog team to the marker right when I could finally find it and picked up the trail that got us down the river and eventually picked up the overland trail. But it was really windy. It was really some weather. And my thought was, oh, boy, here we go again. I hope this isn't a repeat of 2009 with that horrible weather and the heavy, deep snow that we experienced. So it was a little worrisome at that point.
And you said that the visibility was less than a quarter of a mile, so it wasn't very far at all. I remember watching you guys from the bank of the river, and as soon as you guys passed under that railroad bridge, you were gone. We couldn't see you anymore.
Yeah, it was really bad, and I think what followed was one of the worst snowstorms that Fairbanks has experienced in a long time, which is about 30 miles from where we were, and it really came raining down. The snow was very heavy for about the first 2 days on the trail.
So you guys headed up the overland trail to Galena, so let's start the story there.
Okay, yeah, we made that. The first run is to a little village called Old Mento. We Each musher has the chance to represent one of the original 1925 Serum Run mushers. And after the first night stop at Old Mento, I had the honor of carrying the serum to Tolovana, following the route by Wild Bill Shannon, who carried the serum at that time. And I remember that day it was really blowing hard. The snow was drifting badly. The trail was just disappearing at times. And when you would come out of the woods into an open area, it was drifted over so badly, the trail just, you couldn't see it at all. And I remember the dogs losing the trail at one point and hooking down the sled, walking up front. The dogs had bunched up. They were trying to look for the trail and kind of lining them out. And it got to the point that when Don Duncan, one of the other Ceremon mushers, came up behind me, we decided to hook the two dog teams together in a train. We hooked his dog team to the back of my sled, and while Don acted as brakeman on his sled, I walked out front and helped lead both our teams across that open area and that whiteout, kind of looking for the little markers on the trail until we got back into the woods. And that's not the kind of thing that I guess would typically occur during a Iditarod race, but the Sierra Mon expedition functions sometimes like those expeditions of yesteryear, where you really team up and work together and even hooking dog teams together to get you through a bad spot. And by golly, it worked.
Right, right. Well, I apologize. I meant to say Old Mento instead of Galena. Galena's way up the trail there, so that's what I wanted to say was Old Mento. Michelle, do you have a question for Vaughn?
No, I just have a comment. Lately, you know, we're down here in Denver, and a lot of people are following what you're doing up there, you know, trying to run the Iditarod, and then they hear me talk about the Serum Run. And it's amazing in 2011. You know, people know the story of Balto, but then they equate it to, oh, yeah, yeah, those guys that run the Iditarod, they're doing that because of the Balto thing. When I explain to them about the Serum Run and what I've learned just since we've moved up there last year, it's amazing how people are so drawn into the story and how they have, I don't know, I guess they get a romantic view of Alaska, and, you know, you guys are more hero-like to the people that I'm telling about it than, you know, the Iditarod mushers. Iditarod mushers are considered athletes. You know, you guys are more considered to be like heroes. You guys are still carrying on this awesome tradition of education, you know, for the interior and making sure that those people are doing all right and making it.
That's a great point. Vaughn, do you want to comment on that?
Well, I would tend to agree. I mean, those Iditarod mushers are terrific athletes, the mushers themselves and of course, their dogs. And the Serum Run dogs are terrific athletes, and I think the mushers, particularly this 2011 run, were very capable mushers. But the way we run the trail is a little more of a throwback to the old days, the old ways of doing things, and especially getting to those villages and having that time to make the contact with the villagers, coming into a village where there's a lot of children to meet and greet you, and being able to take the time to let them help you feed the dogs is something they probably wouldn't get to experience with an Iditarod team coming through.
Right, right. So you guys are in Old Mento. You're heading down the trail. What happens next?
Well, I was carrying the serum to Tolovana, and Tolovana is a little log cabin about 60 miles from the start of the expedition at Nanana, and there was a rather amusing story that happened to me and my team on the way out there. A section of this trail is bordered by the original telegraph line that carried the message from Nome all the way to Nanana of the need for serum and the outbreak of diphtheria. And as I was running a section of that trail between Old Mento and Nanana, my dog team suddenly bunched up and got snagged on something. It was a very narrow, brushy section of the trail. I hooked down and went forward to find out what the problem was and trying to get the dogs lined out. I had 12 dogs in harness. And come to find out that the first three or four rows of dogs had run through some kind of wire, and that was down across the trail. And after wrestling with it for a bit, I realized it was a piece of the old telegraph line that had fallen down across the trail. It had formed a type of loop, and the leaders had run through this loop, pulling the swing dogs and the other team dogs behind it until they finally got caught up in their harness. and I couldn't pull the dog team back through it. Of course, I can't pull a fully loaded sled through this now tightening little loop of wire on the trail. So I was forced to just to break the wire. I couldn't cut it with my Leatherman, but wrestling with it for about 20 minutes, I was able to break this wire and free the dogs from it and kind of push it off to the side of the trail. And when I got the Tolovana, I walked into the roadhouse and made my little announcement that Wild Bill Shannon had arrived with the serum and took it over by the stove. And I said, I got good news and bad news. The good news is I safely got the serum here. The bad news is I had to cut the telegraph line that carried the message to Nanana in 1925. And our team thought that was pretty amusing.
Well, these days it's all going by text message and Facebook, so I think it's okay.
Yeah, it was just. Yeah, I thought it was very ironic what happened on that section of the run.
Sure, sure. So you said that each musher gets a chance to be the serum run musher from back in the day. How is that chosen, and what is that like to have to carry that quote unquote serum on that day?
It's really exciting, and the way it's done is at each 8 o'clock meeting. As before you depart and get your dogs prepared, there's a meeting of the entire team, and Aaron, who is our musher coordinator, recalls the story of the team that came into that point and the team that left that point and who brought the serum in and who's going to take it out, and she selects someone to be that musher for the day. And the serum is passed to that musher. It's a ceremonial kit of little serum vials that are packed in this little cooler wrapped in furs, and they get to carry that in their sled to the next checkpoint or village on the trail or stop on the trail, and then their responsibility is to bring it in and warm it in the room or in the tent if we're camping, and be prepared to pass that off to the musher who's selected for the next day. So on the day that you're carrying it, it's really exciting because you're reenacting history. And I know when I carried it to Tolovana, you're running that exact route. The telegraph line is there along the side of the trail. When I came into the Tolovana Lodge, it was really unchanged since when Wild Bill Shannon arrived there in 1925. There's no running water or electricity, and you really get a great sense of stepping back in time. It's terrific.
And just to clarify to people that may not know, the original serum run was a relay. Each musher carried it to an individual point and then passed it along, and that's what you guys are reenacting, right?
Well, and correct, the original run was a relay, and they covered the entire distance to Nome, I think, in about 5 days, if my memory's serving me right. Whereas with the serum run expedition, the entire expedition team is running the entire 800-mile route to Nome.
Right, right. So you're in Tolovana, you've passed it along. What's the next adventure on this expedition?
Well, you're working your way down, you know, across Alaska. You worked your way from Tolovana to Manly, and then Manly out to Tanana, where you hook up with the Yukon River. The expedition runs on the Yukon about 250 miles. That's a very long stretch to be on the Yukon. It's, of course, frozen solid. It's up to a mile wide, and it's a big, wide, frozen behemoth, and it can be a really monotonous run for the dogs. I think we had scheduled 6 days on the river, but we cut it down to 5 days of running due to a little scheduling change that we had to work into our program. And it gets to be a little tough mentally on the dogs.
Right. And was it in Manly that you guys had to stay for a couple extra days because of weather and also for the Iron Dog race?
That's correct. There was a really bad storm on the coast. I heard it was blowing so bad that there was some open water that was blowing upriver and
wow.
Snow that was drifting very, very deep. And it affected the Iron Dog race that was returning towards Fairbanks from Nome, and they had to hold up the race. That meant they had to hold us up because the serum run going westbound and the Iron Dog race headed eastbound would have met on the Yukon River, and that wouldn't have been good as they're doing about 120 miles an hour and we're doing about 10 miles an hour, and we would have been nothing but traction for them as they come at us. So we had to be sure they got the Tanana ahead of us, headed towards us, before we got the Tanana and made our way on the Yukon River. So we were held up in Manly a couple of days waiting for them to get through that bad weather.
And for a little bit of perspective, the Iron Dog is ran from Big Lake to Nome to Fairbanks. And like Vaughn said, those guys are going about 100 miles an hour, and they're doing it in just a few days. And it's on the same trails as the Serum Run as well as the Iditarod. This trail is still very well used. It's the highway of the interior Alaska. And everybody knows who Sarah Palin is. Sarah Palin's husband, Todd, he's been a multi-year champion in this Iron Dog race. And it's a tag team race of two snow machiners as they work their way from Big Lake to Nome to Fairbanks. Okay, Vaughn, let's pick it up.
Well, I remember when we left Tanana, we had decided to increase the length of our runs and to do multiple 60-mile back-to-back runs. So you left Tanana, you ran 60 miles, we camped on the river. We had somewhat milder temperatures than they had in 2007 when the last successful Serum Run took place. I think it went down to maybe minus 30 in Tanana and maybe minus 20 when we camped on the Yukon, compared to the minus 50 plus temperatures they had in 2007. So the cold weather wasn't a real bad problem. However, what we did experience that I thought was a challenge for the dogs, and that was the clear, pristine skies with that sun just hammering down on the dog team on that big white frozen Yukon River was really tough. And because we're not running at night per se, we're running off a schedule so we can do school presentations and get the trail breakers out ahead of us, that what ended up happening most of the time is your dog teams are getting out of camp or the village late morning, close to noon. So there you are running on the Yukon through the hottest part of the day, and that was really tough on the dogs. On my third or fourth day out on the river, on the run between on the run to Galena from Ruby, my dog team just shut down at about 4:30 in the afternoon due to that sun, and I just let them just lay down there and rest until well after dark, and then got them moving again. And we ran through dark and got within about a mile of Galena. It was about midnight. It was probably 20 or 30 below. It was a beautiful, clear night. We had a beautiful display of the northern lights on the way, which was wonderful. It just was one of those magical moments running behind your dog team. And seeing that display up there, just you and them on the trail in the dark on the river, and it was beautiful. But as we approached Galena, we missed a turn. There was a problem, I think, with the marking of the trail at that point, and I had to backtrack the dogs a couple of miles and pick up the other trail. And after doing so, they just hit the wall right there, and my leader, Willow, I think really just felt a little discouraged at that point. And I remember he just stopped the team. I could see the lights of Galena about a half a mile away. I felt like I could throw a rock and hit it, but we had to stop there. I didn't want the dogs to feel like they had failed to get to where they wanted to get. And when I looked at Willow, the leader, and went up my headlamp and I looked at him, he just sort of sat down and heaved this big, heavy sigh. His head dropped, his shoulders dropped, his ears went flat, and he just looked really just very despondent and sad about failing to get to maybe where I thought we were supposed to be. And I remembered handling it by just going up, pulling the tugs off the dogs, putting their blankets on them, feeding them some meat, and telling them, good job, guys. This is exactly where we wanted to stop for the night. You got me where I wanted to be. And trying to give them that encouragement, because the last thing I wanted them to do was felt like they had failed in any way.
Right, right. And you did have to get some leader support from another musher, didn't you?
I did. There was a little further down the trail, and in fact, after getting out onto the coast, ran from Unalakleet over the Blueberries to Shaktulik. When you leave Shaktulik, you run across Norton Sound to Koyuk, I think it is. And it's a big, flat, featureless run across Norton Sound. It's 40-something miles. You can't see the other side of it. And it's a spot where there's a lot of dog teams will just sort of shut down there. I was listening to one of your recent broadcasts with Jason Barron.
Uh-huh.
on Iditarod, and I think he recalled a team shutting down out there. And I know it's been a problem for different teams, not only Iditarod, but Serum Run, just becoming discouraged by that featureless, it's not a landscape, it's a frozen ocean. There's just nothing on it but ice as far as the dogs can see. There's no trail per se. There's maybe just a scratch mark across it. And it can be really mentally challenging for the dogs. And my dog team did just shut down there. We tried everything to get them going. Unlike Iditarod, I can't take the time I may need to get them and run my own schedule to the next checkpoint. You're really traveling as a group, and it's important that you're kind of leaving together the next day. And in a decision that I made with the team veterinarians, we crated those dogs and got them across the sound and into Koyuk. And the next day I was approached by one of our mushing team members and a friend of mine, Molly McCarty, who offered me one of her dogs to fill in his lead and to run with my other leader, and it just made a tremendous difference. And again, that's a situation that sorts out the Serum Run expedition from Iditarod, is the fact that Iditarod can't take dogs from other teams. The Serum Run expedition, kind of going back and heralding the way of doing things in yesteryear, including in Antarctica, you do whatever it takes to work your dog teams together to get them down the trail to, you know, your destination. And sometimes that can include borrowing or switching dogs around between teams.
So let's talk a little bit about the vet care with Jerry Vanek and Lee. I don't recall Lee's last name. Those guys traveled with you, didn't they?
Yeah, Jerry Vanek and Lee Bolt were veterinarians. They were two of our snow machiners. They're traveling with the team. They kind of come up through the teams during the day on your run between point A and point B. If you have an issue with the dog, they're there to help you out, to maybe examine the dog, to give it a ride if maybe there's a sore shoulder or wrist problem. And they are always there for you at the beginning and the end of each day also to evaluate a dog, offer them care. They were just terrific.
I think that's key to an expedition's success, is having that team support that you guys need. And I know one of our dogs, one of Aaron's dogs, was flown back, Shrike was flown back in Unicolete because he had a sore shoulder. And they probably could have pushed on or at least carried him in the crate in the sled. But it was a decision from the vet crew as well as the musher that we need to fly this guy home. And that's very common in Iditarod and Serum Run as well. But having that knowledge and support, I think, is very key to an expedition like this.
It is. And the mushers have the chance to learn a lot from these veterinarians.
Right.
They, you know, are explaining the care or evaluating a dog for you. And, again, unlike the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race, if you've got a dog that's maybe got a little problem with the shoulder and the vet determines that a couple of days rest would probably really turn this dog around, we'll crate them for maybe up to 1 or 2 days. If they're suitable to go back into the team and rejoin their teammates, we will do so. If they can't recover in that amount of time, it's elected to fly the dog home. But that gives that dog a chance to recover and get back into the team. And I know I experienced that with my senior sled dog, Chewbacca, who turned 13 years old on the expedition.
Wow.
While we were on the Caltag portage between Caltag and Unicolete. And my entire dog team, they were all geriatrics. They were between 11 and 13 years old. And I know Chewy had a bit of a sore shoulder there a day, and he got to ride a day or two, and that really gave him what he needed to become a member of that team again. But that's an opportunity that is presented in the Serum Run that you wouldn't have on the Iditarod.
Right, right. Michelle, you have something to add?
No, I'm just enjoying the story. I mean, I honestly can't wait to become part of the Serum Run. I think it's really awesome.
So you guys are in Shaktulik now, which is right there on the coast, right, Vaughn?
It's right on the coast, and what an incredible place that is. This was my very first time on the Alaska coast. And to drop down out of the Blueberry Hills behind your dog team and see that coastline where you're really up high, you can really see the vista, you can see the spit that runs out into the frozen sea where Shaktulik is located, is just an incredible vista. And the dog teams were parked that night down right on the beach. I've got a terrific picture that just really shows how remote that area is. When you see a dog team parked along this beach and just this frozen ocean behind it and just a little bit of driftwood sticking up through the snow and ice in the foreground, it's quite remote. It can get very windy there also. It was very windy in Unalakleet, I recall. And, again, we left there and traveled across Norton Sound. Unbeknownst to us, when we got to Koyuk, that evening was the night of the horrible earthquake in Japan and the potential tsunami warning that was coming our way, which we didn't have knowledge of right away. But before we left Koyuk for Elim, there was just some discussion amongst the expedition team about the safety of traveling on the sea ice up along the coast to Elim if there was a tsunami that was to come and push its way through into our area. We went to one of the elders of the village and had a discussion with him, and he recalled that the last time there was an earthquake of this magnitude in Japan, I think he said it was 74, that there was a terrible tsunami on the coast there in the Koyuk area, and it pushed that ice up 30 feet. And
wow.
If you were out running on it, it could be fatal.
And you guys are running on the ocean there, the Bering Sea. So tell us about that. When people think about that, they think about the Atlantic Ocean or the Pacific Ocean. You guys are running on ocean water. Tell us about that experience.
It's amazing. And, again, it's just absolutely featureless. Some of it's very hard and smooth, like running on concrete. There's other times when it's just very rough. It's just such a vast vista to look ahead and witness as you're running along. When you can finally see a shoreline, it just seems like it doesn't move towards you for hours and hours, and you're just running over this ice as the dogs are following the scent trail of the team ahead of them. And it's an incredible sight, and I really admire the dog's ability to just travel hour after hour over that that landscape without rocks and trees and things passing by them to kind of pique their interest. It takes a lot of mental fortitude for them to do that.
So tell us a little bit about the cheeseburgers. Did Aaron bring along the cheeseburgers this time?
That's a good story. I don't know how you heard about that. Did you hear about that from Aaron?
Oh, yeah. I've heard about it for the last couple of expeditions.
We got to Shaktulik, and I remember coming in, and you're cold and tired. You've taken care of your dog team. They've been fed and watered, and they're bedded down on their straw, and you come straggling into the school building, and thinking about making your dinner. And there was Erin, and she hands me this kind of slightly crumpled McDonald's cheeseburger in its wrapper to be microwaved. And I looked at that, and it was just like I had been handed this little brick of gold. I mean, it was just an incredible treat. And I'm looking at her going, how in the tarnation did you ever get something like this out here? And I suppose they'd been packed along, but that was such an out-of-place type of experience to have. There you're in Shaktulik, this little village out on the remote coast of Alaska. You just feel like you're thousands of miles from nowhere, and someone hands you a McDonald's burger. It was quite a juxtaposition of just oddities.
So you enjoyed that McDonald's like never before then?
I did. That little burger never tasted so good. It was a lot of fun.
So you guys are in go ahead, Michelle.
You said a dollar delicacy.
It really
well,
was.
Well, here they're about $5. So you guys are heading out from Shaktulik, Unalakleet. You're heading into White Mountain, getting close to Nome now. What's going on in this part of the expedition?
I remember that when we come up off the ocean and we came into White Mountain, which is a beautiful community. There's actually trees there. You kind of come up off the ice and come up this what appeared to be a road that was frozen over. And I was being assisted on some really slick ice by Jerry Vanek, one of the snow machiners. And I remember him just pointing over the side of the trail where you could see the frozen ocean and the sun was going down and the rocks that were down there. And it was just this inspiring, incredible view. And him telling me, this is something you can't capture on a postcard. And this is something you have to pay your dues and run on a trail like this to experience it firsthand. And it just sent chills down my spine to know I was a part of that. And thinking of how many hundreds of miles we'd already traveled to be there and what a challenge it was for those dogs, especially those older dogs, to have taken us that far. It just kind of came together at that moment. It was one of those magical moments on the run, like the night we ran under the Northern Lights on the Yukon River. And when we got up to White Mountain, I think that was the run into Elam where we saw the – I'm getting my locations turned around here a little bit. But I remember it wasn't until we got to White Mountain that I let myself think for the first time, I think we're actually going to get to Nome. Because as we were told by Erin, our musher coordinator, she just really wanted us focusing on each day's run and not to really think about what was happening 3 days down the run. You just really had to stay in the moment like your dogs. Just getting from marker to marker or mile to mile, just get through that day and let the next day take care of itself. But when I got to White Mountain, I went to Jerry Vanek and I was chatting with him and I said, I'm just allowing the idea to creep into my mind that we may actually get to Nome this year.
And how far is that from Nome, White Mountain?
I think it's about 77 miles, something like that.
So a couple of days then.
Yeah, it was just 2 days run, yeah.
So you guys are in White Mountain, and you're getting ready to do the final push there into Nome. What happens on this last couple of days on the trail?
Well, again, we're enjoying the great weather, although that sun continued to be a problem for the dogs as far as how warm it was. And we left White Mountain. We climbed over a mountain range, up and over a mountain range, then drops you back down to the coast on the run to safety. And That was a tough run due to the fact there's a lot of what were described to us as false summits that you would come to, and you could just kind of see the dogs cresting the summit, and they kind of pick it up, and they're excited about getting to the top, and get up to the top, and, well, there's another summit in the distance, and then there was another and another. And once we crested that last one, it was a tremendous relief to see the coast spreading in front of us and make that run downhill and the last 20 miles to safety. But it was really tough climbing those hills in that sun. The air temperature, I think, was maybe 10, 15 degrees, but when you got that much sun, it just felt hot. It was really hot.
I remember following you guys on Facebook. Some of you guys were even getting suntans out that way.
I think everybody got sunburn on that trip because that sun, there's no escape. When you're on the coast or when you're on the river, it's just, there's nothing to hide behind. You can get sunburn out there. Even when it's cold, that sun is just really intense.
So when you guys head into safety, there's a tradition there with the dollar bills. Tell us about that.
That's a great tradition. That we pull into the safety roadhouse. It's there just adjacent to the sea ice, and it's this old roadhouse. It's rustic. It's a wonderful place to pull into. I've read about it for years, and it was great to be pulling in there with my dog team thinking we're just 22 miles from Nome. And when you go inside, it's divided into two sections. There's a back section that we kind of bunked down in, and there's a front section that's a little bar where they serve a little bit to eat. And the walls and the ceiling are wallpapered with dollar bills. And it's a tradition for the mushers to write a little note on the dollar bill and find your little space and post it there where it'll be for all time. And I remember taking that opportunity to take my dollar bill out, taking the marker pen from the bartender there and writing Von Plus Wolfie, Nanana to Nome, 2011, and stapled it to the wall and thinking that that journey with that dog was almost complete because I had been packing her in the sled throughout the entire trip.
Right, right. So that dollar bill's still hanging there, and it will probably be there for at least until they do something else with the roadhouse, I would imagine.
I imagine so, and it's terrific to walk through there and read all the messages on those notes from all the Iditarod mushers and that have come through there for years and years and years. It was just like walking to a little museum.
So we have about 10 minutes left, Vaughn, and I want to make sure that we tell the story of Nome very acutely. And what I want to mention here is in this last 22 miles from safety to Nome, John Baker, who won the Iditarod, is literally hot on your guys' tail. And you guys get into Nome only about 6, 7, 8 hours faster than John Baker and Ramey Smith, these two first and second place Iditarod finishers this year. They broke all the records. But to a little perspective there, you guys started on the 20th of February, and here it is, the second week of March, and the Iditarod has caught up to you, and they started on March 6th. So what is that like to be out on the trail all of that time? Here it is, over 3 weeks now that you guys have been on the trail.
That is a long trip. We had our run into Nome was the 23rd day on the trail. It's a long time to be out there, and we know the Iditarod first-place finishers are coming right up behind us, and they're traveling fast, and we knew we were going to be in there just a few hours ahead of them. And it, for me, it was a bit of an honor. It felt like we were sort of, in a sense, breaking trail for them and, you know, covering that ground, and they were coming up behind us, and that was really exciting. I had never been to Nome before, and to leave safety and climb Cape Nome and get to the top there, it's a pretty good hill, where you look north up the coast to Nome, which is 14, 15 miles distance, is an incredible feeling after that 800-mile run, and to know you were just going to, you know, glide your team down there up the coast and get into Nome was a very emotional experience for me. And knowing that Iditarod mushers were coming up behind us, it was the most magical moment of the expedition. And it's a very emotional time. I've talked to lots of mushers, including Iditarod mushers, who have a kind of a polarized emotional experience going into Nome. There's a part of you that's so relieved that you and your dogs are making it there safely. And there's another part of you that just doesn't want the experience to end. And I remember stopping the team many times on that stretch going into Nome and just hooking down and going up and petting the dogs and telling them what good dogs they are and how happy I was for them that they had completed this legacy at the age they were at particularly. And just giving them that praise and just worshiping them and, you know, pulling the hook and moving up the trail another mile or two and then stop again and pet them again. That getting to Nome, it was bittersweet.
Right, right. So you get into Nome, and you and Wolfie have made it, and you're there under the Burled Arch. What happens next?
Well, again, I just to back up a little bit, when we arrive in Nome, the mayor comes down and meets us. And there's a lot of people that have come into Nome to welcome the Iditarod finishers. So there was a lot of people that came down there onto the frozen beach to welcome us there. And the mayor came down, and we kind of had this ceremony of handing off the serum to the mayor, which kind of completes our journey as an expedition. And afterwards, the dogs are flown out right away. We drove the dog teams from the beach of Nome up to the airport in Nome and put them on a charter DC-6 and got them safely on their way back to Anchorage. Our dog team expedition assembled under the Burled Arch afterwards. And as we were doing so, I took a vial of Wolfie's ashes, and I spread them along the finish line underneath that Burled Arch. And for me, right at that moment, I felt like we had finally completed and brought full circle that promise that I had made to her in 2005, that I would take her there, and there I was laying her ashes down underneath that finish line for all the Iditarod teams to run over when they came in. And it was just a fabulous feeling to feel like I had fulfilled that promise to that dog, and we had made it there.
That's a great tribute, Vaughn. And I tell you what, I was part of that pickup of all of your dogs, and it was well into the night. I don't think we got home till 3 or 4 in the morning that night from coordinating all of those dogs and gear and everything back to where they were supposed to go. So even the handlers here up in the populated areas of Alaska were part of your expedition, and we want to make sure that they get a little bit of a thanks there too, because all of us put in a little bit of work for you guys to do this expedition, and it's what a marvelous time that you guys had on the trail. So what happens now? You're back in Washington. You've fulfilled your quest. You've been able to decompress a bit, and I'm sure you're back to the normal day-to-day grind of a working man and a sled dog owner. What's happening now, Vaughn?
It's a difficult time. A good friend of mine, Laura Dogereau, who's a Washington resident and an Iditarod finisher, and Laura had a saying that she shared with me once a while back that she says, you know, there's so many people and resources to tell you how to run Iditarod or to get to Nome, but there's no one to tell you, you know, how to finish the run. And finishing that run and coming home is very difficult emotionally. You're coming off this high of climbing this incredible metaphorical mountain and bringing you and your family of dogs to Nome and getting there, and there's a bit of this kind of letdown coming home and reentering the busy way of life and the trappings of the daily grind and work and all these things. And it's a very difficult transition. It's difficult for me. I talk to some of my colleagues on a weekly basis, and it's difficult for them to kind of work their way back into the quote-unquote grind of life, and it can take several weeks. That's kind of what we're going through right now.
And you guys have been back at least off the trail for a little over a month now. What is going on with your dogs? I'm sure they're all home safe, and the snow's melting, and you're getting ready for spring. What's going to happen over the next year or so?
Well, it's really hard to say. Again, my dogs are mostly retired after this run.
Yeah.
For next year, it's really hard to say. I wanted to give it 6 months before I even decided kind of where I wanted to go in the world of dogs next. But right now, I just want these dogs to relish the nice weather. Right now, we're having a sunny day. They're out on the yard, laying on the grass, just enjoying, you know, the promise that I gave to them. That was, when we get done with Gnome Kids, I'm going to get us back home, I promise, safely, and you can enjoy the nice, cool grass of this spring. And that promise is being fulfilled right now. They're out there laying down. But what's next for me is to really kind of go back and focus on the story, to review in my mind the events of the 2011 Serum Run, and begin working on that next book project to bring this story to the readers, and also a video project. I did take a lot of HD video, so that's what's in the works over the next few months for me.
And we look forward to having you back on when those do come out, Vaughn. I look very forward to having to be able to talk to you about that. And take your time, you know, relive this adventure as you can, because it's a once in a lifetime experience. I know you guys tried twice, and it's not necessarily that you didn't finish that first time. It's that whole process of the expedition, isn't it?
It is, and it was just kind of really finishing what we started, which was my reason for going back up there. And I'm so grateful to these dogs that they made that possible. For those who are interested in knowing more about what my plans will be next, just go to my website. It's callofthewildhuskies.com. I do keep a blog there. I've got photos and video of the expedition, and I will be posting the latest news on the development of the next book to tell some of these really great stories that we experienced in 2011 and share that with our readers. So visit the website. And also, there's a link to my Facebook page there. Go to the Facebook page. There's more photos and videos from the expedition there as well.
Yeah, you're very active on Facebook, as well as most of you guys that did this expedition. And there is also a Facebook page for the Serum Run. Just type in Serum Run in the search bar, and it will pop up. And there's some great stories and pictures and all that from there as well. Michelle, any final question for Vaughn?
No, I'm just looking forward to, you know, the next book and the next adventure. Looking forward to meeting you someday, Vaughn. You know, keep up the adventures.
Thanks, Michelle. Thanks for the good words. And again, the book is available on my website. It's also on Amazon.com. The title is A Long Way to Gnome. And if you go to my website, I can make a signed copy available to anyone interested.
There you go. Vaughn Martin, Serum Run 2011 finisher and a heck of a guy. Like I said, make sure you follow him on Facebook and check out his website, callofthewildhuskies.com. Vaughn, it's been a pleasure. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Michelle, for having me on board.
Thank you very much. On next week's show, we're going to have a CD that is all about dogs in a country song, and it's going to be a great show. I'm looking forward to getting the CD and taking a listen. So I know we're running out of time real quick, so join us next Sunday. I believe it is 2 o'clock Mountain Time for that. Just make sure you follow us, blogtalkradio.com, Dog Works. We'll talk to you guys soon. On behalf of Michelle Forto and Vaughn Martin, this is Robert for Mushu Huskies. Goodbye.